prophet plea. The great high priest whose name is loud. Whoever lives and bleeds for me. Name is graven on his hands. Name is written on his heart. And all the while in heaven he stands. No tongue can give their reply. No tongue can give their reply. Satan tempts me to despair and tells me of the guilt within. Of what I look and see him there, made amends to all my sin. Because a sinless Savior died, a sinful soul. Spotless righteousness, the great unchangeable I am, the King of glory and of grace. Oh, with himself I cannot die. I stole his purchase. Yeah.
Yeah. this is my prayer for 2016 and for the rest of my life, really, that no matter what circumstance that I'm in, whatever this year brings, whatever my life brings, that you will be my desire and that I would willingly place my life in your hands because they are trustworthy and you are good and I love you. So God, that's my prayer for everybody in this room. I thank you for your faithfulness. Amen. Alrighty, guys. Good job singing. Yeah. Give somebody around you a giant high five and tell them Happy New Year, and then you can have a seat.
Well, hello everyone and welcome. My name is Beth and I am a volunteer around here. Now, whether this is your first time here or you've been here since day one, we are just so happy you're joining us today. If you are new around here, what you need to know is that Crossroads is one church with five locations: Oakley, Mason, Westside, Florence, and Uptown. But we were started by a group of people who had given up on church, but not quite on God. So whatever your beliefs are, please know that this is a safe space for you to come and learn about God. We consider ourselves to be tireless workers, sacrificial givers, and obsessive includers. So if you take a look in your program today, you're going to see a ton of community groups that are going to be offered to you in this winter session. We actually have room for 5,000 people to come together in small groups. That's enough, clap. To come together in small groups and really bond with each other and grow spiritually, getting closer to God. I personally have attended the mom's group at least 3 seasons, helping me become a better mom. My husband and I attended a couples group, helping strengthen our marriage. And I also attended Understanding the Bible, which helped me learn the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament. So take a look through your program, find something that speaks to you. I guarantee you'll find something. And when you do, go ahead and sign up at crossroads.net/CG. Because we're obsessive includers, we also want to bring our children along on this journey with us. And so we're super excited to announce that this summer, we're going to have middle school and high school camp. I know, it's great. This is going to be sleeping in cabins, riding zip lines, playing water sports, making friends, and spending some time with God. It's the camp that you wish your parents would have signed you up for. So if you have a student in 5th through 7th grade or 8th through 12th, you're gonna wanna sign them up on Monday, January 4th at crossroads.net/camp. And if it's anything like man camp, spots are gonna fill up fast, so make sure you do that. I mentioned earlier that we're sacrificial givers. That's because everything that happens around here happens because of the generosity of everyday people like me and you. So in a moment, you're gonna have a chance to be generous. A little disc is gonna pass you by. If you're new here, just let it pass on by. But if you call this place your home, please contribute what you can. And if you'd like to set up a reoccurring e-gift like my family has, you can do that at crossroads.net/give. We're gonna have a chance to watch one man's incredible story about life change that's possible through attending some of the community and healing groups that we offer. Before we do, I just wanna thank you again for coming. Happy New Year.
Joining Father's Group was definitely outside of my comfort zone because I'd never done anything like that before. It was something that I felt like I should do, but just not something I would normally do.
When Daniel first told me he wanted to join the Fathers at Crossroads, I was really excited, encouraged that he was going to, you know, make a commitment to make family and God a priority in our lives. Once he joined and once he went, he found a great community and network of men that were very warm and welcoming, and it just made Crossroads feel like a smaller community.
You know, as I've sort of been on this journey, it's really opened my eyes to a lot of things about myself and my relationship with God. And in this past year, I actually got baptized.
That came as a result of having men that he admired their faith and their outlook and their approach in life.
I think that Rebecca sees how I'm driven and inspired by this group. And, you know, I've always wanted to be a good father and a good role model to my kids. And I think that this has been something that's helped me be better at that. Doesn't mean that I wasn't a good father or anything like that. I just always want to be better. And I think that that was something that Fathers has really helped me with on this journey.
Now, Man, good stuff. If you want something new in 2016, you got to try something new. Community groups may be one great outlet for that. Well, I'm really really fired up about talking today because it's not just the first message of 2016 for me, but it's a great clarifier for us of what do we want out of 2016. Do we want what we know, which we know is possible because we know it, or do we want what we don't know, which seems to us to be impossible, but actually with some changes, it could be possible. So let's go ahead and pray before we start on that. God, I pray that the words that have been prepared today would not just be honoring to you, but they would also be helpful to the people that you have brought in today and who you want to send out into a new world and into a new life. So help me to be clear and help me to honor you with all that's said. And I pray these things according to the character and person of Jesus. Amen. Yeah, by the way, welcome back from Awaited. Great to see everybody. Yes, awesome. My name is Brian. It's great to have you with us today. You know, there's a theme throughout the Bible of doing things that are beyond possible. And Jesus talks about this a number of times. The book of Mark, chapter 9, he's interacting with a dad who's got a son who's got some major issues, not the least of which is he is deaf and mute. And Jesus says to this dad, all things are possible for him who believes. All things are possible. Now, why would we come to a place like this weekend? Why are you here? I don't think it's because there's some religious, cultural obligation to go to church. I think that passed and went away a long, long time ago. I think people like you came here today because you want what isn't currently possible in your life. You want a connection with God. You want something you don't currently have right now. And Jesus encourages this kind of stuff of saying, hey, look beyond what you think is possible. In fact, when things capture our imagination, they're beyond what is possible. Movies, the movies that capture most Americans' attention are fantasy movies or superhero movies, things that go beyond what we know and we expect right now. Now, I don't mind superhero movies, but I'm a sucker for good old-fashioned plot. I'm a sucker for good old-fashioned character development. I went to see Star Wars. Anyone see Star Wars, the most recent one in here? All right, raise your hand. Anybody not an American didn't see it? Go ahead and raise your hand if you're not. All right. I mean, I'm not a big Star Wars geek. I'm really not. The reason why I went was it is a cultural phenomenon. And Han Solo is the thing that draws me in because the cultural character development of this guy who was just a renegade when I saw him first in a movie when I was in fifth or sixth grade to this guy who is now a dad, the character development is fascinating for me. It's rare for us to see character development in movies. That's why I rarely go to them. Although I did see a couple this Christmas. I saw Creed. Anyone see Creed? Oh, man. I knew that one was going to be great. You had the foster care character development thing happening there. Father figure stepping in. You've got the, being an orphan. You got crazy. And Lib and I loved it very, very much. But most of the movies that are blockbusters are superhero movies. I understand this because when I was a little kid, man, I was all into like Superman. I remember there was old black and white television reruns of Superman, faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings with a single bound. It was Superman. I was like, oh gosh, so that's a superhero. Superman, that is awesome. And then sometime later, all of a sudden on the television after school came Batman reruns. I'm like, hold on, there's a Batman? I thought there was just Super Batman. That's awesome. He looked kind of weird, but I tell you what, Batman had some great gear. I mean, REI needs to take a page out of Batman. They got awesome gear around here. And so we keep rolling these figures out, and now we're just kind of stretching like Ant-Man. Ant-Man.
Able to hide in Berber carpet.
I understand Ant-Man's good, actually, because of the character development. But all I'm trying to say here is that we're looking for something that's beyond the norm. And I believe we're looking for something beyond the norm because we're looking for God. And we have to believe that we can get beyond the norm. This father, when he's wanting his child to be healed, he says to Jesus, I believe, help my unbelief. This is an interesting thing. I believe, help my unbelief. This is one of the reasons why I trust the Bible as much as I do. The Bible doesn't paint for us perfect stories that are in perfect spiritual language. You would think this God would say, I believe absolutely you can do it. No, he goes, I believe, help my unbelief. This is encouraging to me. For you to be different, you just have you need to have enough belief to recognize you don't have enough belief. For you to be closer to God, you have to have just enough faith to recognize that you need more faith. For you to have a life of more power, you need to have just enough spiritual grounding that you realize that you're not grounded enough. And we see the greats throughout the Bible who do the impossible beyond what current people think are possible, leveraging these things over and over again. The one we're looking at for the rest of our day today is a guy by the name of Daniel. Daniel is an Old Testament guy. He was in the part of the Bible before Jesus came along. Daniel, many of us don't know the story of Daniel, but Daniel is actually baked into American culture. He's baked into our culture because we name our kids. Many of us in this room or online who are streaming right now, hello streamers, are named Daniel because of this guy who lived millennia ago. There's a bunch of names of people from millennia ago that no one names their kids. No one names their kids Nebuchadnezzar. They name their kids Daniel, and that's a popular name because of who he is and his character and his ability to go beyond the possible. We know in our culture about the writing is on the wall. That's a story from Daniel where he interpreted a finger who wrote something on the wall. So Daniel is a person of impact. And to do what we think is not possible, we need to take some cues from him, and it requires three things. Number one, we need to know the true God. We need to know the truth about God. In the book of Philippians chapter 4:13, another verse in the Bible, it says, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. I'm just giving you a couple of these verses today just to let you know this idea of like doing the impossible. This is not a weird sidelight in the Bible. It's over and over and over and over again. The best person I ever heard talk about this verse is a guy who by the name of Jeremy Cowart. I can do all things through him who strengthened me. I saw him speak in Nashville. I hear a couple of smattering of applause. I saw him speak in Nashville a couple of years ago, and I was blown away. And I thought, gosh, if I could ever share him with people at Crossroads, I would do that. And so we had our first conference for people who are entrepreneurs or business owners, several months ago. And I invited him to come up. And as I expected, he crushed it. He blew people away. Far and away, the most popular session of all the speakers, far and away, was Jeremy Cowart. And unfortunately, because he had copyrighted material, we couldn't share that digitally. If you weren't at a conference, you couldn't get it. So we said, well, let's solve this problem. Let's bring Jeremy in to do a Crossroads weekend service. So Jeremy's actually going to be coming in next weekend. I'm telling you right now, people who are clapping saw him. You can talk to anybody who was at the conference. He far and away was the most inspiring, crazy, crazy story. And so he's going to come in next week. He's going to talk about this verse and his life. I'm telling you right now, you do not want to miss next week. And we are obsessive includers. And you're going to want to make sure you got somebody with you who normally doesn't come around, because you're going to sit here and you're going to go, gosh, I wish I would have brought him. Why didn't I bring her? Oh, he's going to be really, really solid. Just a little pep talk for us there. But Philippians says, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. And Ohio has taken this into consideration, because our state motto is, with God, all things are possible. That's a governmental official state motto. With God, all things are possible. That's pretty crazy. Now, if you're in Florence right now, you're going, Ohio, Ohio, Ohio. What's all this Ohio? What about Kentucky? You know what Kentucky's motto is? With moonshine, all things are better. It's awesome. Especially the raspberry stuff. That's good stuff. That really is. Now, Daniel is a Jew, and he and all the Jews are overrun by a world power called the Babylonians. They are dominating the culture, overrun their land, disperse them. And what the Babylonians do, because they're smart folks, is they say, hey, for us to continue to go further and to be great, we need to take the top talent from every culture that we dominate. So they go to the Jews, they look for who's the best, who's the brightest, and they bring them into an executive training program. And Daniel is brought into that executive training program. And specifically, the branch that he's brought into is the spiritual branch, the branch that believes in the occult, the branch that tries to figure out what the stars say about reality. They're called the Chaldeans. And the king that is over Babylon at this point, Nebuchadnezzar, he has a dream that's really troubling to him. and he knows it's something that's different. He knows there's some spiritual meaning to it. So he calls in the Chaldeans to interpret his dream for him, except instead of telling him the dream, he says, you know what? If you're really spiritual, I want you to first tell me what the dream is and then tell me the interpretation. Chaldeans have never heard anything like this, and here's what happens. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand, for no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. I love what Nebuchadnezzar does here. He actually calls their bluff. He says, look, if you're really spiritual, then do something spiritual. How do I actually know that your interpretation is right? I think this is awesome. I think there's so much spirituality in our country that needs to be called out in the carpet. The bluff needs to be called. Like, well, God told me this. Okay, maybe. I can't verify that. Okay. Well, this is just the way it is. Well, how do you know that? Part of why I like the scripture so much and I'm so in love with Jesus is it's something that's identifiable and verifiable. We know that he lived. Time is dated after Jesus of Nazareth. We know, at least I believe after doing a great amount of study, that he literally and physically rose from the dead. It's how we can account for how culture was turning and how people were coming to him. They saw something. We've seen verifiably how every culture he goes into, it changes for the better. It's something you can study. Not all of it you can study, but there's enough there. And Nebuchadnezzar says, so just tell me the dream. They're like, oh, we can't do that. No one can do that. So Nebuchadnezzar said, I thought you were phonies. I thought you weren't real. So we're just going to eliminate all of you. You're just gone. Now, Daniel is in the executive training program. He's pretty fresh. He hears that this is all going to be eliminated, and he's like, okay, I need to do something here. I need to step up. And so here's what happens. And Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the interpretation to the king. It's very important. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. We see how Daniel is connected to the truth of God because he looks at every good thing as coming from God. He blesses the God of heaven, but don't miss the order of events. He goes to the king and sets up an appointment. Goes to his secretary and says, set me up. I'm good for next week at Tuesday at noon. Let's do that one. And then he goes and trusts that God is going to tell him what the dream is. He doesn't know. He doesn't know what the dream is. He doesn't know what the interpretation is. By faith, he has enough faith to say, I trust my God. He's going to tell me. This is crazy. He does what the Chaldeans say is impossible. He commits to tell what the dream is. Now, it's kind of a crazy story. I don't have time to go into all the depths of Daniel's story. I'm just giving you the 30,000-foot view of his life today and the principles that we can get from him. What I want us to see is this. Daniel is connected with a power source, with a person that strikes awe in the hearts of other people because of the capacities and the truth that God exudes. Now, I ran across a blog or an article on why it is that we feel awe. Arizona State psychologist Michelle Sciotta studies this thing, and she was asked the question, like, why is it that we feel awe? I think it's partially because as superhuman infatuated people are, we're drawn to something that's beyond us because it tells us something about God. And so also, we have this desire for awe. I'll let her speak for herself. I'll read her blog entry or her article. It's a bit lengthy, but I think it's worth it. She says this. More than 4.5 million people visited the Grand Canyon National Park in 2013. More than 3.5 million visited Yosemite. That same year, worldwide revenues for Cirque du Soleil, the theatrical venture emphasizing extreme feats of acrobatics and agility, were close to $850 million. Fireworks displays, first developed in 7th century China, are now featured in celebrations throughout the world at tremendous public expense. The Hubble telescope, which provides our most vivid images of outer space, initially cost $1.5 billion to launch, and accumulated costs of the project have been estimated at over $10 billion. A behavioral scientist looks at these numbers and asks, why? Why do people spend huge amounts of time, effort, and money on these apparently pointless activities? An economist might conclude that they are all an appalling waste of resources. Why are fireworks circuses, and images of distance-based experienced as so moving and meaningful when they offer neither material nor social reward. As a psychologist who studies human emotion, I approach the problem by asking how these stimuli make us feel, what they have in common, what they might tell us about human nature. Panoramic views, brilliant colors in the skies, remarkable human accomplishments, great works of architecture, art, and music, they all have the power to evoke feelings of awe. And despite their differences, each of these things defies the scope of our day-to-day experience, challenging our comprehension and even our sense of reality. In contemplating them, we may feel small, insignificant, and yet connected with the world around us, in touch with something greater than ourselves. Time seems to expand as we are immersed in the present moment, detached from our normal, mundane concerns. Now, I don't know all of her belief structure, but let me tell you the rest of the story here. The rest of the story is we're drawn to things that give us awe because we're drawn to find a God. We're wired to want more than we have right now. We're wired to want superhuman movies because we are wired by God to want and experience more than we have right now. And we are wired to love fireworks and space photographs and stuff because we are wired to want something beyond what we can see and understand, because we are wired to want and to know God. And he's not a force, though he is forceful. He is not a light, though he exudes light. He's knowable. He's a person.
I am the might before the sword, the tremors in the spear shaft. I craft my ways from blazes of firestorms, absorb the failings of deadened ends to render the floors I dance upon. I am the spaces between applause, the roars of hearts running through heaven's halls. I breathe the forms of light and silence, stall the course of cosmic riots. I am the glory of the giants, Manasu, Sagamatha, watchmen of the Asian plains. They yield my name, made famous through the cries of albatross flocks, inflamed in Pacific fires. I am dressed in the spray of Nevada dunes, clothed in the shadows of Sahara caves. I am the light of lunar flames, fleshing the rains of Amazonia. I paint the trains of Antarctic quests, release dominion to desert panthera. I authorize the remains of Aztec and Inca that bloom through the visions of mountain tribes. I ride the skylines, breathe the signs, ignite the paths of astronomy's eyes. I am the unheard, heard in the storms that burn on my words. I am the yearned for. I am the word. I emerge deciduous from the wetlands of your cries, rise through the moments you wake. I bring the dawns that shake the fevers from your remembrance. I am here. I am imminent. I am he who crosses the plains through which you strayed, discover the parts extinction seared. I dust away the dried remains of tears, drain the lakes of your regrets. I wet the wells, till the soil, forsake the toil, quell the rages, sow the broken pages with my belief in you. I bring the you have never quite met. I am the desire that keeps your pillow wet. I am the heartbeat you seek when you chase after dreams. In the reachings and sighs, you are looking for me. In the body touching body, it is me you seek. In the groans and the longings, it is me you seek. In the yearning dream, in the need to be seen. In the love me, it is me you seek. In the breath drop wonders, gasping hunger. In the touch of a stranger that makes you feel younger. In the books and the fables, in the this is me labels, in the is this me, in the hear me, hear me, say my name in the touch me, find me, need me, find me in the aching pain, in the love, the music, the beats, the taste, in the heat, and the need for embrace, in the color, the gaze, the meaning, the desire, in the flame of the voice, and the spirit of the fire. When you cry for more, my name you weep. I am he who waits for you to reach. I reach for you and wait. When you lie half broken and awake, I am the watchman of your sleep. I wait and wait till the shakings cease. I am the truth they call release. When the darkness flares and starts to speak, I sculpt the shades of daybreak. It is me you see.
We're wired to want something beyond us. We're wired to want God. And Daniel has the life of impact he has because he knows how to seek God and align his life to the truth. And the way he does that is by incorporating specific activities into his life. It's the second thing we need if we want to go beyond what's currently possible, is we have to have the right disciplines. Now, I almost change the word of this point because we hear discipline, it's like, discipline. I thought about making it, we have to have the proper positive habits. That would have been like nicer, but I said, no, let's just call it what it is. It's called a discipline. What is a discipline? A discipline is a regimented activity you put into your calendar and you put into your life to give you muscle mass so you can do what you currently can't do. And Daniel does that. He decides to do different things. Guess what? If you want something different in 2016, you're going to have to do something different in 2016. If you want to accomplish something different in 2016, you're going to have to discipline yourself differently. If you want a life that's different than your peer group, and we tend to have peer groups of people who think like us and act like us, and you want to go beyond them in your accomplishments and your connection, guess what? You're going to have to do what none of those people are willing to do, or else you wouldn't have gathered together to be like each other. You have to learn to be different. We have to bring disciplines into our life that we don't like to do right now, we're not sure are going to work, but we know for sure what I'm doing right now isn't working and get me beyond what I know is now currently possible. And this is what Daniel does. In the beginning of this executive training program, they say, good news, you're coming in and you're getting all this great food, you're getting all this great wine, you're just going to bring you right onto the king's diet. We're going to bring you into our culture. And Daniel says, I don't think it's a discipline I want. Here's what the story says. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and the wine that he drank. And they were to be educated for 3 years. And at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. Now, let's just talk about a couple things here that are a little weird. First of all, the thing eunuch. What is it? What is it? We don't even know what a eunuch is. A eunuch is a man who has been castrated. We would call him today ballless. So that's sort of euphemistic kind of thing. But this is a strange, strange thing. This is important to understand here because Daniel is high enough now, getting to the high, that he's now interacting with the top brass of the country. That's what a eunuch was. In ancient times, as you would get higher and higher in the king's court, the higher you got, the more likely it was if you were a man, which of course only men got higher in the court, you would be castrated. The reason for this is because people of ancient cultures, they're comforted by, there's a lineage, there's an understanding of, oh, your dad was this guy and your dad was this guy. And so if you were castrated, you had no ability to have offspring and you had no ability to rule, therefore, because no one would accept you as a ruler because you couldn't kind of have your own lineage. This happens still today. We see over the queen mom in England. England folks are just comfortable. Oh, that's the queen. Trace back. They're comfortable by that. And we think, well, we're not like that. Absolutely we are. My gosh, what is our fixation with electing Bushes and Clintons? I'm sorry. I mean, that's just weird to me. That's just really, really weird. But Americans are like that. We're like, oh, I understand them. Okay, let's have them. It's just odd. It's just part of human nature. And so when Daniel goes to the eunuch, he's going to a top official and said, look, I understand you want to take care of me. I understand you want me to have great food, just like the king, because only the king would have great food, but I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm a Jew. I'm very, very kosher. And there's things the king eats that I don't eat. Unfortunately for Daniel, he never enjoyed bacon-wrapped shrimp. It's amazing. Very, very double unkosher. But I can't do that. I have different disciplines. You say, okay, well, that was a religious thing perhaps. But then what about the wine? Jews like wine? Jews did great wine. You know this was a great wine. Why is Daniel turning down top shelf wine? Don't know. We don't know. All I'm trying to make sure we understand is this. Daniel wants a life that is different, and that means he has to have disciplines that are different. He can't do what everybody else is doing, or else he's only going to do what everybody else is doing. He can't have in his calendar everybody's schedule, or else his schedule is only going to lead to where everybody else is, which is not far enough. He can't have the same values as everybody else has, or else his life is going to be just plain average. Friends, this is massive. This is huge. I'm telling you, it doesn't matter what you've resolved to do in 2016. If you haven't pinned it to a discipline, nothing will change. It doesn't matter how many positive thoughts you have. If it's not pinned to a discipline, nothing will change. It's actually part of the reason why many of us are frustrated with God. We think, oh man, I'm doing the right things. I'm thinking good thoughts. We just assume if we're a nice person, God's gonna dip his sugar finger into our life and twirl it around and make our life sweeter. Doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way. We have to discipline ourselves to get any place different. I know some of us are going, gosh, I just don't have the discipline gene. We would love to just explain everything away by genetics, but the reality doesn't work that way. There is no discipline gene. We saw that verse earlier on in 2 Timothy while we were worshiping. 2 Timothy 1, verse 6 to 7. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but a power of love, of self-discipline. Self-discipline. So the closer you get to God, the truth of God, which is step one, the more you embrace discipline. In our country, this is going away, away, away. 44% of us, statistics show, only 44% of us make any New Year's resolutions. I'm not saying we have to make New Year's resolutions, but I am saying this. If there's not a regular discipline you have on an annual basis where you evaluate your life and try to do something new, you won't ever do anything new. It doesn't have to be December 31st. Is it May 31st? Is it September 1st? You have got to have a regular rhythm where you say, okay, stop, hit the brakes. What's my life looking like? Do I like what I'm doing? Do I like where I'm going? Do I like the thing? If you don't, you will never be different. There will never be anything that's outside of what's currently possible happening in our life. Only 4% of everybody who makes resolutions have anything to do with God. For some reason, we just think we go along and I get closer to God. It doesn't work, friends. We only go as far as our disciplines go, and God actually looks at the disciplines, and he says, ooh, there's someone who's disciplining themselves. I'm going to get more involved in that person's life. That's part of what happened to Daniel. Daniel isn't, like, disciplining himself to greatness. There's the disciplines, and God sees the discipline and honors it and comes alongside him and does something really, really profound in him. I hope you've got things you want to do this year, and they have to be pinned to a discipline. You can't just say, oh, I'm going to lose weight in 2016. Not going to happen. You have to say something like, I'm going to walk a mile every day in 2016, or 5 days a week, or I'm going to run 3 miles a day, 3 times a week, or I'm going to not drink any calories. You can do that. You can have water and black coffee. I'm not going to drink any calories. You laugh. Very doable. I'm not going to drink it. Or if you want to say, I'm not going to drink any calories other than Friday night or Saturday night. I'm not telling you what we should do. All I'm trying to say is, friends, if you want something different, you have to do something different. If you want something that is not possible right now, you're going to have to do something that's outside of your realm right now. One of the things that Lib and I want to do this year is we want to get smarter. We want to get deeper intellectually. And so we've pinned it to a discipline, and it's going to be reading. We've set up when it is we're going to read together, either reading to one another or reading beside each other. And I don't know anybody who is getting smarter who isn't a reader. I don't know anybody who isn't getting more knowledgeable who isn't a reader. Now, I get a little smarter when I go to Cracker Barrel. I do that little tea game, you know, trying to jump things. But obviously not smart enough because I can never remember how I did it last time. But there's other ways to increase your intelligence. But I tell you, there's nothing like the good old-fashioned discipline of reading. So we've got an identifiable discipline for that. Is it, do you want to expand your community? Do you want to get more friends? Okay, you got to pin it to a discipline. Discipline might look like when I meet someone new, I think I might like to establish a friendship with them. I'm going to personally disclose something about myself. I'm going to model vulnerability. I'm going to write 3 encouragement notes a week. People don't get them anymore. When you get them, it's like, oh my gosh, that person really thought about me. I don't know what it is. I'm going to buy lunch for somebody. I want to get ahead in my career. What's that look like? You have to have a discipline that says, all right, I don't know what it is. I'm going to arrive at the office earlier every day. I don't know. I'm going to have a contact list of my sales calls of everybody who I'm going to call. Whatever it is. Want to get closer to God. Okay, you're going to have a discipline for what it looks like to read the Bible. You're going to have a discipline for what it looks like for prayer. When are you going to pray? When does that happen? And I'm not telling you what you should do, what you shouldn't do. All I'm saying is this, friends. If you want something that's not possible right now, it's because you haven't disciplined yourself to go beyond the possible and to get the approval and extra grace of God that comes when he comes along someone who says, gosh, there's someone who wants beyond what I have right now. There's someone who's going to a new place. Now, Daniel is actually not just having to get closer to God and have the right discipline. He's actually having to fight things that are negative in his life. He's actually having to come against things that I'll call for this point lies. Things that people are telling him are true, but they are not actually true. Daniel is so successful. He's so effective. He has an amazingly successful life. We don't know this just because we name our kids Daniel. We know this because through the book of Daniel, he lasts longer than rulers do. They're cycling through over and over and over again. Different rulers are coming in. And so here's a new ruler who's writing. We're hearing now from his perspective in Daniel chapter 4, and I'll just read it for you. It says this. At last Daniel came in before me, he who is named Belteshazzar, after the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And I told him the dream. There's another dream, another king wanting another dream interpreted, saying, O Belteshazzar, chief of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you and that no mystery is too difficult for you, tell me the visions of my dream that I saw and their interpretation. Now this king is being complimentary to Daniel because he's saying, the spirit of my gods is in you. This is very nice and complimentary, but Daniel knows this is a lie. He receives it as a compliment, but Daniel knows it's a lie because he understands that the Lord God is one. Hear, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one. God, there's one God, only one, not multiple deities who are out there as the Babylonians would believe and practice. And so he knows it's a compliment, but he knows it's a lie. No, he doesn't have the spirit of different gods in him. No, he has the spirit of one God who's on his life that gives him the power to go beyond what anybody else can do, that one God, and the way he's honoring that his disciplines. But these lies he's got to come against. And one of them is his name. Notice this Belteshazzar. Belteshazzar. What does this Belteshazzar mean? This is a false identity they put on Daniel. They bring people into this executive training program, and they say, no, we're going to eliminate your identity. Just similar to how slaves in our country would come in from Africa, and what would slave owners do? Let's eliminate your identity. Let's eliminate your name that was given you. We'll give you a new name. It's a lie. It's not your identity. It's not who you are. And so they would give these names that had attached to them controlling behaviors that were lies to them. Belteshazzar is not Daniel. We have to wage wars against lies. We have to wage wars against lies. Daniel 1:7 says this, and the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. This is where his name comes from, the chief of the eunuchs. Daniel, he called Belteshazzar. Hananiah, he called Shadrach. Mishael, he called Meshach. And Azariah, he called Abednego. If you've been in church for a while or know sort of certain catchphrases, you've heard of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Not Shadrach, Meshach, and a bad Negro. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These are lies. Well, that's funny. Let's just like relax ourselves. That was funny right there. Anyway, let's keep going. At least it was funny for me. And if it's funny for me, that's really all that matters. So here we go again. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These are not names. These are lies. These are false names. These are not the names that their parents gave them. These are complete lies. And if we peel back the veneer, we find that these are really, really sinister. So let's take a look at them. Daniel, his parents called him. Daniel means God is my judge. And they said, no, we're going to change your name to Belteshazzar, which means Lady Protect the King. Friends, seriously, gender confusion is an enemy of the evil one. This is an intentional lie they tried to work in his life. It's a long, long, long time strategy. Hananiah means God has been gracious. Gosh, you know, if you want to do something new, have the awareness that God is gracious. I can try something new because if I fail, that's okay. He's a gracious God. He's not going to squash me. No, they changed his name from God is gracious to I am fearful of God. That's what Shadrach means. I am a fearful of God. Man, if you, this is why many religious people don't try anything new. They're afraid of anything new because they're afraid that God will smite them. I don't know, but Daniel and his friends have to come against these lies. Mishael means who is what God is. How's that for a name? Who is you? Who is what God is? That's who I is. That's an amazing name. His new name is Meshach, which means I am despised, contemptible, and humiliated. If you have failure in your life, if you've done something that was unsavory, and you own that new identity, and you feel, oh, I'm just a bad person. God's just punishing me. And you can't get out from that. Happened before. That's not who you are right now. If you can't appropriately spiritually get out from under that, that's a lie that owns you. It's a lie that keeps you from doing new things. It's a lie that keeps you from going to a new place. You have to have a confidence that, no, God loves me. He loves me. He gives me grace. He gives me forgiveness. Azariah is Yahweh has helped. Boy, that's a great name. If you feel like, no, Yahweh has helped me, so he's going to help me in these disciplines. He's going to help me to do. Yahweh has helped. That is a springboard to something new. But Abednego is a servant of Nebo. No. Yahweh, your God, is not going to help you. No, you're a servant of a false God. You're underneath the false God, and you do nothing other than what that false God wants. Friends, our names, most of us had our parents give us names just because they sounded good, and maybe they looked up the name in the book. Our names might not have all that much significance for us. It's on our birth certificate. But what is the identity you have assumed? Are there beliefs you have about yourself or about God that are lies and you need to come against? Daniel did not embrace Belteshazzar. He knew that's what he was called, but he knew that was a lie. That wasn't who he was. We need to identify the lies that are in us, and we need to kill them. Like lies like, well, God doesn't care about my problems. I made my bed, now I got to lie in it. Why do you think God doesn't care about your problems? Or, you know, I've messed up too much for God to work in my life. Why do you think that you're beyond being used by God? That's just not true. Or I'm defined by my failure, or I'm just like my dad, who might have been negative, or I'm just like my mom, who might have been promiscuous, or I'm just like that. That's just the way I am. Well, what do you mean that's just the way you are? You're agreeing with something that is a lie. Maybe that is the way you're acting, but is that really the identity and the name that you want put on yourself? Well, God doesn't care if I go to new places. God only wants me to follow the rules. Doesn't make sense. You got Sharpies when you came in today. We're going to do an exercise in our reminding moments. I've given us a number of examples to help stimulate what you might think about yourself or what might be a lie that you believe that isn't truth, that isn't the truth about God and his identity. So if you're flexible, bring up your foot. If you're not so flexible or you want a better right, take off one of your shoes. We haven't done this exercise for a while. We're going to write lies on our feet, and we're going to grind them down in 2016. We're going to write lies that we believe on our feet, and we're going to trample them. Now, last time we did this, this was years ago that we did this last, and there's a friend of mine, Bob Rowland is his name. I just like sharing verifiable things you can test and see. He had a foot problem. The doctors couldn't figure out what it was. A foot problem. So in the midst of this time, he circled around the part in his foot that was hurting and asked God to heal him. He circled around that. And by the time he had walked out of the building, the pain was gone and stayed away. Now, that doesn't happen a lot. It's called supernatural because it's not normal. It's not natural. But I'm telling you, this stuff can be significant for you. So one of the lies that I believe is I believe that I get a little freaked out every January at the beginning of a new, what I would call preaching season, or also every August, which is when I return from an extensive summer break I take, I have this sense of fear that, oh no, I'm not going to be able to hear from God and generate the content that's going to be helpful for people. Why? Because I'm not smart enough and I'm not creative enough. And so this lie, it kind of wears me down because it causes me to sort of be in fear of, oh no, the well's going to run dry at any moment. And gosh, 20 years later of being here at Crossroads, serving you all, it's not run dry. It's a lie. So I write down here, you are not smart enough or creative enough. That's just one. Go ahead and keep writing. What is it? What is it you need to grind down and just identify? It needs to be underneath you. It needs to be underneath you. You need to grind this down. Daniel 10:11. It says, O Daniel, man greatly loved. We need to have that as our operating knowledge of God. He loves you. He's created you. Let's ground ourselves in that truth of God as we go forward in disciplines this year. Let's ground ourselves and grind down the lies. He doesn't love us. He doesn't have plans for us. So for the first, let's just stand on that lie. Let's stand up. Let's go. If you've got it done, let's stand up on that lie right now. Let's start grinding it down. And let's root ourselves in the closure of our time here today. Let's root ourselves in the identity of God, that He is a God who loves. He's a good God. Good Father.
You're good, good Father. To you out. To you out. To you out. I'm loved by you. It's who I am. It's who I am. It's who I am.
God, we want to ground ourselves in this truth, and we want to be grounded in it. this week as we grind down the lies that we put down on our shoe. God, I pray you be with your people here as we leave. Be with us as we establish new disciplines. And as we go to new places, the places that other people don't think are possible, but through you all things are possible. Thanks for our time, God. You're good. You're a good dad. Amen. All right, great weekend. I hope for you next weekend. Gosh, don't miss it. Do not miss the opportunity to bless a friend of yours. We'll see you next weekend.